We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know, the New England Patriots, I bet you, have taken this very, very seriously. And they got bit. They got bit hard. They really did. So it's well, funny. Yeah, it's easy to say, you could have done more, you could have done better, shame on you. But we also have agreed that there's no such thing as a border that you can put up that can really keep this out. I mean, nobody likes saying, come on, Raiders, as much as we do. But I don't know if it's really to be blamed on anyone without further information coming in.
Well, they're trying to get the information, and you can pretty much tell if somebody hasn't been wearing their tracking device without a photograph. This is about their cavalier view of the protocols that everybody agreed to. New England has had COVID problems largely because they had a lot of guys opt out ahead of time, which they were entitled to do. Tennessee had COVID problems because they were having unauthorized practices, and the NFL decided not to punish them for that, which is the NFL's shame. But how many more games have to get moved out of their regular schedule? And how many other teams have to get impacted because one team just doesn't feel like paying attention? Because that's what we're talking about here. You know, I don't need the smoking gun to see what the Raiders have done. And this fits right in line with what their general attitude has been. Masks optional. You know, go to a fundraiser and hobnob with regular folks. You know, now the offensive line basically is, you know, breathing all over each other, you know, and I believe that absolutely to be true. And I fully expect the NFL to figure out a way not to nail them either. And if they do nail them, then we could talk about unfairness of prosecution. But Tennessee, you know, they did it. If you want to sit there and find a way out for them, well, they were trying to, you know, get around the fact that they couldn't practice. These guys are practicing without stuff that they're supposed to wear every day. It's as if there is no compliance officer in Las Vegas. And it's not charming this year. The Raiders flouting the rules used to be a thigh-slapping, commode-hugging good time for everyone. Now it's just dangerous. And it's costing people money.
Yeah, there does seem to be a pattern, right? Between the fundraiser and now the offensive lineman and John Gruden. Like, it seems to be a franchise attitude, which is odd because Mark Davis is among the most responsible owners in terms of dealing with the virus. So I'm not quite sure how to interpret it.
It really is odd. I think it speaks to, you know, when you got the loudest voice in the room and you choose to not speak about something or ignore something, people will ignore it with you because that's the message you send. And maybe Gruden has been subversive in a way to his own team by not setting the right tone and example from the get-go. Having said all that, they beat the Kansas City Chiefs. So does anything matter more to the NFL than that? And the answer, I think, is no. And if they had to go get 22 homeless people from the Las Vegas Strip and put them in uniforms to have a game, they would do that.
Yeah.
I read this article today, yahoosports.com, basically saying, there's no such thing as the NFL shutting down. It ain't going to happen. There's too many billions of dollars of commercials already sold, and too many people are dependent on that money coming in. It ain't happening. oh, what if this guy and this team and this, it ain't happening. What if you had to cancel 3 weeks in a row and put the Super Bowl in March? They'll do that. They will do that. They don't want to do it. They're going to try to cram it all in, but they're going to get it all in one way or another. And for those of you who don't know what's going on, today the Raiders had, basically their practice was a 7-on-7 drill. It's like you throwing a football around with your buddies in the backyard because their entire offensive line, we're talking about Colton Miller, Denzel Good, Rodney Hudson, Gabe Jackson, and Trent Brown, every single one of them is on the COVID-19 reserve list. I don't know how many positives they got, how many false positives you're looking at. An abundance of caution is maybe now the standard operating procedure for them. And I guess there's no time like the present when you're dealing with this. But the Raiders, who were supposed to be on Sunday Night Football this week, have been moved to the 1 o'clock in the afternoon our time slot. And Seattle versus Arizona has been moved to the Sunday night game. It's not because they think that there's going to be more people tuning into that, but they're basically saying the Raiders might need to be moved further. Now, Vincent Bonsignor, who covers the Raiders, says that according to a source, unless more players test positive for COVID-19 among the Raiders, the game this Sunday will be played as scheduled. Well, I should say rescheduled now at 1 o'clock. That's wishful thinking. That's all that is. And hey, I hope the wish comes true. I want them to be able to play. I don't want any more positives to come in. But, you know, to say that, yeah, it's all going to go according to plan is the kind of spitting in the wind that you shouldn't be doing given the lay of the land all around us. You're like tempting fate.
Yeah, I mean, they've been spitting in the wind the whole time, and the NFL has showed that they don't want to bother with it. Their idea of discipline is, please don't tell us what you're doing. So other people basically have to tell them, hey, these guys are screwing up. And the idea that somehow, you know, this is going to be considered charming by John Gruden and some old-time Raider people is just idiotic. Because at some point, you keep having to move games for this team or that team. Money will be lost. And they might have to move games into the middle of January and change the date of the Super Bowl and do all that stuff. But if it costs some money, they will figure out a way to punish you later. So it's really working against their own self-interest. But given that it's the Raiders, I'm not surprised that they blow their nose all over their own self-interest because they don't get it half the time.
It's weird, though, to characterize the Raiders at that or as that as a franchise when the one person you could say is the Raiders actually seems to be on the better side of it. Isn't that bizarre? I mean, I guess that just means like Gruden is really the tone setter and no one's paying attention to Mark Davis. But boy, I wonder if you could give Mark Davis truth serum, whether he would do this Gruden contract over again or not.
I mean, tell me what your record will be this year.
I mean, based off the win over the Chiefs, it's a yes, right? I mean, just that alone.
Maybe.
Well, here's the thing. So far, to the best of anybody's knowledge, Davis hasn't pushed back on Gruden on anything. And the time that he does will be the time when you'll find out. But so far, you know, even though they've put up with two bad seasons, they've gone to Las Vegas to entertain no people. There hasn't been apparently a moment where Davis isn't sort of, you know, taking a knee in front of Gruden at all possibilities. So that's when you'll find out if he has any second thoughts. But right now he spent like a decade trying to get Gruden under contract. So I suspect that he's going to eat this continually.
Honey. It's an awful lot of money to pay a guy to not coach a football team. You know, it really, really is. So, yeah, you bought this. You got to live in it. No doubt about it. We invite you to go to 957thegame.com. Check out any of our social media accounts, and you'll see the video where the Butcher Boy, Joe Shasky, was hanging out with Matt Steimetz, elevating their tailgate. We invite you to elevate your tailgate, brought to you by Snake River Farms, the pioneer of American Wagyu beef, and by Zenni, the official eyewear of the 49ers. Gold Bar Whiskey, by the way, also the official whiskey of the 49ers, and it's good. It's smooth. It's nice. Comes in like a novelty bottle that looks like a gold bar, which is normally like a do not, don't bother. Like they spent more money on the packaging than they did the whiskey. No, not at all. It's a novelty gold bar bottle, but the whiskey in it is fantastic. It really is. Trust me, I've had a few gold bars already. Damon Ratto and Kolsky coming up next. We're going to say hello to Alex Boone. We love talking football with him. He knows the trenches very, very well. He's coming up next here, brought to you by Amazon Workforce. Thursday, here on 95.7 The Game, a man who knew the 49ers very, very well. We're thrilled to have him back on the show. He's one of our favorite conversations, and he knows the offensive line like the back of his hand. Alex Boone, here on 95.7 The Game, joining us on Damon Ratto and Kolsky, courtesy of the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line. Alex, how you doing, man? It's been a long time, no talk.
Dude, it's been way too long since I talked to you guys. How are you guys doing?
We're doing really well. Thank you so much. And I'll tell you, one of the reasons why I think we're doing a little bit better is because one of the biggest concerns we had about this football team got fixed in the weirdest of circumstances. Like, if you're having problems in your interior offensive line and you got the Rams on the schedule, that sounds like a big ass-kicking coming your way. Daniel Brunskill, Laken Tomlinson, and Ben Garland did a hell of a job slowing down one of the best defensive players in football, and we're still not sure how they did it. Did you watch the game enough to tell us how you think they went about slowing down the wrecking crew that is the one-man wrecking crew, Aaron Donald?
Absolutely, dude. You know, as soon as I turned that game on, where is he? Where is he? 99, I got to watch him, right? Well, how is he tormenting somebody else's life? But you know what was great about it? He didn't show up, not at all. And I think that that is to be commended because there's a lot of ways they did it, right? They did it with their scheme. If you notice in the first half of the game, that ball was coming out quick, right? Regardless of who was on the other end, it was coming out. You better be ready because it's coming right now. And I think that's one of the things that helped them to loosen up this defense was, hey, listen, you have one of the best premier pass rushers in the NFL, probably in the whole world. How are we going to slow him down? We're going to get the ball out of our hands quick. And if it's not the first read, it's going to be the second because the ball's got to go. Another reason was they beat up on him. The run game is always so pivotal to their offense. If they can beat on defense, they beat on the cornerbacks, they beat on Aaron Donald, they're running deuces against him. They got two guys on him at one time coming after him. They're zoning him. They're running. The one thing I noticed that you don't see a lot of people do, they kind of went after him, didn't they? They kind of ran at him like, hey, listen, we're really not afraid of you. We're going to put two guys on you, and then eventually we're just going to let one guy do it. And I think Daniel Brunskill stepped in a huge way. Now, there are times that he was on the ground, but at the end of the day, you did a phenomenal job against one of the best players in the history of the league.
So it wasn't really so much that Aaron Donald didn't show up as much as it was the 49ers removed him from the game then. So it wasn't a matter of effort. It was a matter of superior scheme.
I think when you talk about Aaron, there's never a question of his effort. He's always 100%. I've never seen him really shut off. And you could see in this game he was getting frustrated, right? I think a lot of times when you watch people play them, they run away from him because they like to see him on the backside because two guys can easily block him on the backside and hand him off to the other guy. And then all of a sudden he's just kind of frustrated and slows down. But when you talk about running at him, running zones at him consistently, watching Daniel Brunskill block him all by himself for the touchdown, I mean, those are things that show up in my mind. And it's like, man, not only did you frustrate him, you took him out of his game, you took him out of the entire game. In the pass rush, all of a sudden he started getting double teamed, right? The center sliding to him. And then they say, hey, how are we going to counter this? We'll blitz you. That's their main thing. We'll show another blitzer on the other side. That way it forces Daniel to go one-on-one with him. And he held up miraculously. It was amazing.
As far as the Niners line overall, it's been a source of a lot of concern in these parts all year. And just in general, they all seem to be better against a Rams team that you wouldn't expect that would be the case. In your mind, is that just it takes a few weeks to get guys on the same page? Guys are specifically playing better. There's better communication. I mean, what's the key to what seemed like a very sudden improvement for the line overall?
I think it was a lot of things. I think when you look at this year, you say, hey, listen, these guys haven't had a lot of time together. You bring Trent in right away and you expect him just to kind of jive with the group. That's not how it works. And not only that, but then you got some moving pieces and parts going on with Ben Garland coming out. I mean, these are things that take time, and then takes guys a minute to get together and to, hey, how do you like to call this? How are you going to do this? This is how I like to step on this. It takes them like a million failures to all of a sudden go, okay, now it makes sense to us. And I think you saw that in a great game on Sunday night, which was huge, number one, because it's a divisional game. But number two, because the whole game was predicated on taking Aaron Donald out, and they did a fabulous job. It was like he was not on the field, and then they made it look seamless. That's what was so cool about it, was here are these guys that kind of have been up and down, and the run game's kind of their support, and all of a sudden they just attack Aaron Donald. They just went right after him. And at times when Daniel had to go one-on-one, he stepped up to the challenge.
So if I spin that forward a little bit, and chemistry is such a big part of things, with Ben Garland getting hurt, we've been talking about, is it worth trying to make a trade for an offensive lineman? But is that maybe not as productive as you would think, because it'll take that guy some time to get settled?
Oh, absolutely. It takes that guy, what, how many, 2-3 weeks to get the offense under wraps? And then not only that, you're talking about the center. He's the most important pivotal piece of the offense. He's got to be the one guy that has to be on the same track as the quarterback. That takes time. And so if somebody that's been there, that's seen how Jimmy does it, that's in the offensive line room, and that's another thing. When you bring somebody new in, are they going to gel? Are they going to make this room better, or could they all of a sudden have, you know, animosity towards each other? Those things happen. You bring a new guy in, a lot of guys in the room resent it. Hey, I was working. I was trying hard. I was giving you everything I had. I was doing it right. It was my time to shine. Then all of a sudden, there's conflicting views in the room. These are all things that the GM, and I know John Lynch has been through this, is going through, and he's saying, hey, listen, we're going to put the next guy up because, number one, he's earned it, and number two, he's been here. He's gelled. He's not going to make a big wave.
Alex Boone here on 95.7 The Game. And I'm curious, only because in the COVID-19 world that we're living in, you figure every single GM in football has a list of guys in an emergency they would call if they needed XYZ. I know it's been, what, 2-3 years since you've taken a snap in this league? I think 2017 was the last time you were putting your hand into the dirt. Have either you, though, Alex, or your agent heard from any team in the NFL about, you know, just gauging your interest at all in a return during crazy circumstances?
We've talked to teams, and I think it comes down to, you know, he's been out for 2 years, and another thing is, how is he health-wise, you know? And I think that, like we talked about before, when you bring somebody new in, a lot of eyebrows go up. And not only that, what's it going to do to the dysfunction of the team? Is it going to make things better? Is it going to make it worse? I think people throw that up a lot, and they say, hey, we bring in an offensive lineman, a pivotal part of this group as a whole team. What's going to happen? Is he going to mesh with everybody, or is all of a sudden there going to be problems? And that's one of the things that I think that when we talk to teams, they're like, we just don't know what's going to happen. And right now we're trying to see what we have. And it's like, okay, great. Listen, I'll always be down to play football. There's no question. I love this game, and you could tell I love it. But and it's also got to be a right fit team too, because it's hey, listen, how are we doing? And then all of a sudden, what if you don't like it? And it's like, I understand. Those are questions you have. So we just filter things in and out, and hey, hopefully the chance will come. We'll see.
Well, and I mean, are you still at playing size? I know that when there were concerns about the offensive line around the Niners, one of the, you know, go get Joe Staley. Joe Staley just, and Joe Staley was like, hey, I've already lost 45 pounds. I'm not doing it anymore.
Yeah, so basically when we started talking to teams, it was like, hey, listen, let's get back to 315, back where it was in the Super Bowl days, and having fun and really mashing people around. So sitting at 315 right now, I'm like, hey, listen, this actually isn't a bad spot. I feel good. I'm big again. I'm happy. And it's like I said, waiting to see the perfect opportunity come around.
You talked about cohesion with bringing in an offensive lineman, but the lessons are everywhere. How much of what New England has been going through is a measure of lack of cohesion? Because they had 8 guys basically opt out because of COVID. They've had their share of injuries. And Bill Belichick has made a point over the last couple of weeks of saying, we need to practice more. We've lost practice days. Is that what's happening to the Patriots more than anything else? Is it they look at the guy next to them and they don't know them anymore?
I don't think that's what it is. I think that sometimes when you're away from each other, you tend to think differently, and especially in football, right? And when you're not on the field actively participating and practicing and being together and really messing up together, I feel like especially as an offensive lineman, you only learn when you mess up. Sometimes you got to mess up real bad in practice for it all to kind of make sense. When you're not out there with each other or you're not in the same room picking each other's brain, because you do it differently. Some guys ask a lot of questions. Some guys kind of throw out comments and other guys comment back. Everything's so different. But when you're together, you kind of just start to feel it. Like, you can feel different offensive lines coming together at different times. This is San Francisco's time. Now, the Patriots are going through a whole different thing because, number one, you lost Tom. And Tom, I feel like, was a huge cohesion for them because he was kind of the intermediate guy, right? Like, there's Bill, then there's Tom, then there's the rest of the team. And when you lose that pivotal piece, especially somebody like Tom Brady, your cohesion is going to go all over the place. And then players opt out. They don't want to do this here. There's so many things that they're going through. And then not only that, but now they got to do a whole new offensive scheme because they have Cam Newton there. And he's not Tom Brady. He can run. He can do some fun things. But then you say, hey, how much of that do you want to do? And then I feel like the coaches are kind of not in the same page. And their games have been very weird and wild, not very Patriot-esque. So it's an interesting year for them.
When you face the Rams, obviously, like we talked about, everyone's looking for Aaron Donald. Key on him. You build your offense around trying to beat that guy. How much harder is that to do with a defense like the Patriots, where the strength is in the secondary? So it's not like you could just say, all right, we're going to double team that guy and run it past him. It's kind of all over. Like, what's the approach when the defense's strength is in the backfield?
Oh, I think you absolutely have to run the ball. And this is what they're primed for. Now, I think Raheem Mostert's probably one of the best backs in the league right now, in my opinion. Like, just the way he runs, the way he can see things, his vision. Everything about him is so dynamic, but he's not there this week. So now you're looking to other guys and you're saying, hey, listen, we have to step up. This is what's going to make this offense go this week. We've got to be able to run the ball against these guys. Their secondary is great. They're coached by Bill Belichick. They're obviously going to try and take Kittle out of this game as fast as they can. The second one will probably be Debo. So it's on other guys to step up. And not only that, but keep the same game plan you had. Get the ball out quick. Loosen this defense up. Make them fear you all over. The entire field has to be feared. Don't let them take anything away from you.
We love talking with Alex Boone. One of the best conversations. He's just always fired up and ready to go. We're going to have a conversation a little bit later on today. Since it's Niners-Patriots week, we're calling former Patriots and whatnot, and we have booked a little bit later on in the show Rob Ninkovich, and I have to ask the studio why they would go booking the one guy from Purdue, of all places, on this show. I mean, we pretty much have a no-Purdue policy beyond Raheem Mostert, and this is bothering me. When you were at Ohio State, did you ever pancake Ninkovich?
You know what? We played Purdue only once when I was there, and I don't remember playing him. And it was you know what, though? They're a tough team. Tough team. And I remember playing Rob in the league. Remember, we went there in December in 2011, yeah. And it was like, you know, we were hearing all week, like, oh, they never lose in December at home. It's never happened. Well, we beat them in, like, 6 years. It was the greatest thing ever. It felt amazing. So you got to ask him about it just to piss him off.
We will do that. Thank you so much for joining us, man. Never change. You're still a bundle of energy. We love talking to you. Let's do it again soon.
You guys are the best. Appreciate it.
He's the best. That's Alex Boone, man. He's great. He's great. You know, I don't understand why that guy's not a broadcaster somewhere. I mean,
totally
really.
Agree. He could do any of those, like, talking head shows you want, for sure. I mean, he's perfect for that. It really is true. Someone told me, very early on in the sports media, you want to have a good football conversation, find an offensive lineman, and it never fails.
It's amazing. They're the smartest guys on the field, not named quarterback, because they got the most to know, most to break down, most to prepare for, and it takes full working knowledge of not just your job, but everyone's job around you, because you got to work together.
I have had experience with offensive linemen who were very bright but really ornery. So it's not a universal law.
Well,
you can't be a starting offensive lineman and be stupid, but you can be a starting offensive lineman and be really unpleasant.
You know, I like an unpleasant natured offensive lineman. I would never begrudge anyone an unpleasant nature for a job where you just push human beings around. It's kind of a prerequisite. I remember there would be times where, like, the Denver Broncos would have an offensive line, and the rule was no one talks. No one gets to talk to the media. You're not allowed. They'll kangaroo court you if you actually are seen quoted anywhere in the media. And I think that is sometimes the the personality that offensive lines take because they think it's the right thing to do.
Well, that was driven by his by the offensive line coach Alex, and I'm blanking on the last name, but that was basically their team bonding. These guys with pens and notepads are the enemy, even though you never have to block them at all, and nothing they say or do can impact you in any material way. He found a convenient enemy for all of them, and they all bought in. I think they were probably going to be good anyway, but it was a nice gimmick to have.
I think that's a gimmick football coaches go to with some frequency.
Us against the world.
Yeah.
Hey, some people buy in real quick.
And you know what? It's like a common enemy is as good as a common goal for most people.
Oh, totally. Totally. And it's a lot easier, I think, to just... You know, and here's the thing, you know, when you do say no one here can hurt you, that's not quite true.
Right.
That's not quite true because reputations can be turned on a dime with the wrong story or the right rumor or whatever putting out there about you. Like a media member with an axe to grind can make a player's life more miserable
harder
than it needs to be. That's for sure.
Yeah. Harder for sure. And beyond that, I think, you know, like, players like to tell us they're unaffected, but that's not true. Some guys can handle it. Other guys get bothered by what's written about them in public, and it might affect their play. Now, Ray's right. Like, it's not like anyone in the locker room with a notepad is taking snaps or tackling anybody. So, you know, they're not playing, of course, but the effect can be felt nonetheless.
Yeah, I'm busy trying to find that guy's name because he was sort of the Dante Scarnecchia before there was Dante Scarnecchia. Huh. But
I think that deserves attention too, by the way, since you brought him up, Ray. Dante Scarnecchia, everyone agrees he's the greatest offensive line coach the league has ever seen. He leaves and the offensive line is having
right?
big problems. What'd you say?
McKittrick.
Oh, well, I don't know. My understanding is, as much as people loved McKittrick, that what Scarnecchia has done for 25 years is sort of unparalleled. More than 25 years. 35 years.
If they didn't have to break out the leg whip against Aaron Donald, do you think the leg whip comes out against the Patriots, Ray?
I think officials actually look for the leg whip now, and it's kind of fallen out of favor because of that. You just hate it when rules get in the way of fun.
Really? Absolutely, I do.
Fun is breaking the legs of defensive linemen, apparently.
Yeah, I know offensive linemen don't like it when you can't get like a formal invitation, maybe tear your opponent's ACL, which is probably what happened in more than one instance. Anyways, this Patriots 49ers matchup is very, very interesting, only because it feels like it is a battle of the absolute established head coach in the NFL, best head coach, going up against a guy who is maybe among the heir apparents to the crown of best NFL head coach. Now, if you're saying you got to have a Lombardi trophy in your trophy case before you can even be in that conversation, obviously Kyle's not there yet. But if you had to hire a head coach for the next 10 years, are you more comfortable hiring today Kyle Shanahan without a Lombardi trophy? Or Andy Reid, who finally got one and definitely doesn't have 10 years left. So if you're looking at, you know, who would you want for a long, you know, this is not just a this year situation. It's this guy's going to be your coach and set the tone for your franchise for as long as he's got left. I mean, Kyle Shanahan would be at the front of the parade. And if we all together, gentlemen, were doing a show in Arizona, in San Diego, in New Mexico, in Minneapolis, I would say that. This has got nothing to do with, hey, let's talk about the Niners and how good they might be one day. Like, the guy really is. You can see it with your own two eyes. Smart enough to make the life a living hell for the coach across the field from him. Not a lot of coaches can do that with their own designs. It feels like Shanahan is that guy. And there are enough people who know football to say what he's doing is the real deal. That's not smoke and mirrors. That's actual prepared coaching. I think Kyle's definitely at the front of the list. Sean McVay feels like he would be at the front of the list. Certainly coming off the Super Bowl, he was the wunderkind that everyone was kind of attracted to. You know, but Pete Carroll's too old to be on the list anymore.
The so, two guys who are...
Well, if Pete Carroll's too old, then so is Andy Reid.
Exactly.
That's what Damon just said.
So you'd have to take him off, but... Okay, go ahead, Matt.
I think there are two guys... Like, there's a younger class of coaches. I think Cliff Kingsbury, Brian Flores both probably deserve a look, but we just got to wait. You know, we don't know. Then I think there's the Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, who you just mentioned. But there's two guys who don't get a lot of love here that are kind of in between the Belichick, Carroll, Reed generation and the younger generation. They both have titles, and they both trot out consistent winning teams, and that's John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin. And neither of them have ever had the genius label put on them. Neither of them have ever been looked at as a wunderkind. All they do is trot out a winning football team that plays highly professional football and threatens in the playoffs every year. So I think those two dudes deserve some attention, although I can't lie. If I was hiring my next coach and I had the pick of the litter, it would be Kyle Shanahan.
I think I'd take either Tomlin or Harbaugh because they've proven it. Also, another guy who should be on whatever part of that list you want to talk about is Sean McDermott, because he's taken a terrible, a historically terrible franchise and made them relevant. And it's not just this year. It was last year and the year before.
It was
the
with
Buffalo
Tyrod.
Bills
they
are now
relevant.
A hard out. I'm sorry?
With Tyrod Taylor, they were relevant. There's no question Sean McDermott deserves attention.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there are a bunch of guys who fall into that area but haven't really shown you enough yet. I think there's been a lot of coaching changes in the last 4 years. And for the most part, you know, the guys that you would put on that list are largely an incomplete.
Yeah.
And I think Shanahan is incomplete there too, because I think that, you know, you don't really get to show all the things you know till you've been at this 6 or 7 years. And not a lot of guys get that chance. Shanahan is a brilliant play designer and he's a very good play caller. But as a head coach, especially a head coach who has de facto general manager duties, his bar necessarily has to be higher than most.
Yeah, and I think
so
the general manager.
More to prove.
Yeah, the general manager side is, I think, where we have the most questions, right? I mean, if we look at, yes, Ray said the play calling and the scheming and the, you know, he's very smart. Worth mentioning, he gets as rave reviews as I've ever heard for his demeanor and the way he communicates with players, which is really, in the end, maybe the biggest part of the head coach job specifically.
And it's funny, Bill Belichick gets the exact same thing, but just not with the megaphone, because no one likes to say anything nice about Bill Belichick. But his relationship with his players is so different than the relationship that he has with the media, where he's the monotone, monosyllabic, hardly wants to talk to you guy. He's a much different person on the field, at practice, on game day, before and after. And it's so interesting. You know, you brought up Harbaugh and Tomlin. I think that what's held against them for not being entered into the conversation is that they were attached to a franchise that reeked of credibility before it either got there. So you can say that they picked up and they carried the baton of the franchise, but are they the person that established it? Neither one of those guys established it, but they have carried it far and wide, and will tell you that the Baltimore Ravens really, really are about as well run a football team, and they made a move today that would remind you of that, and we'll tell you what it is if you don't already know. Coming up next, the Ravens made a big move and a little move with a big name. We'll tell you what it is next when we come on back here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, and we're brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Well, as we were just saying, the Baltimore Ravens, top to bottom, one of the best fits in the NFL, maybe even all sports. They are well run. The owner knows what he's doing. The coach knows what he's doing. They have a general manager passing of the torch that is almost like a general manager passing of the torch from, I mean, you know, it's like Montana to Young almost, to go from Ozzie Newsome to Eric DaCosta has been pretty, pretty good for the Baltimore Ravens, and there is more proof of that today. As the Ravens trade for Minnesota Vikings pass rusher Yannick Ngakoue, he is a very good player and one of the best defenses in the NFL, just got better. The Ravens are sending a 2021 third-round pick and a 2022 conditional fifth-round pick to the Vikings for the player. Okay, that feels like a fleecing by the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, we'll see it all come out in the wash and we'll know more, but that is that's not a lot of capital to give up for a proven, no joke, of a real pass rusher in the NFL, and that's what Ngakoue is.
Well, I think one of the things in reading up on this that makes DaCosta different than most is that he doesn't fetishize draft picks the way a lot of general managers do. He went out and got not only Ngakoue, but Calais Campbell and Marcus Peters for a grand total of 3/3, 1/5, and a backup linebacker. So it's not just the Ngakoue trade. It's all three of them, because all of those guys at one point or another have been the best guys at their position in the National Football League, and he still got them all while they were still relatively young.
Yeah, I don't know if Ngakoue has ever been the best, but these are really impactful players. And, you know, I've always been skeptical of the way NFL GMs fetishize draft picks, as Ray puts it, because the hit rate is low, I mean, extremely low. And, like, Yannick Ngakoue, we know what he is. If you can get him for a pick where you're just desperately hoping you can maybe get someone almost as good as him, how is that even a consideration, right? I mean, am I crazy?
I think it's the nature of just a capped sport, and you're looking for guys who will produce on rookie deals as hard as you're looking for proven anything. And
right.
That's why the majority of GMs have fetishized the draft and the capital spent on hopefully, hey, we drafted a guy who was instantly a plug and play guy, and we're
there's also
$100,000 a year.
Yeah, and there's also like every GM doesn't. GMs are not imagining they're going to blow the pick, right?
Oh no, no one's ever run to the podium with a shred of doubt.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess it's hard to think of yourself as someone who's good at this and also think, yeah, but my draft pick might not hit. But that's the fact. No matter how good you are at this, a third-round draft pick's a crapshoot at best. So if you can get a proven pass rusher of all things, of course you're going to give up picks.
Well, except that not a lot of guys do that.
Yeah,
and that's
you're
the
right.
thing. There are more general managers who are accountants first, then football appraisers second. And it's because those are the guys that owners are more comfortable with, because owners understand business. They don't necessarily understand football. If you show them a cap sheet, they can understand that. They can't break down video and look at a guy and say, oh, I see where that technique really worked. They're more comfortable talking in the business world, and the guys they hire to be general managers are those guys more often than not. Eric DaCosta is not one of those. And so, you know, it's probably one of the reasons why the Ravens are run as well as they are and have been run as well as they have been since they moved from Cleveland. It's because Steve Bisciotti doesn't get in the way of the works. It's an ego thing for him, because it's an ego thing for all owners. But it's not about him getting noticed, or it's not about him always getting his way. It's about him understanding that football is at its essence a product that pays off on the field. And, you know, anybody can make money with a football team in the NFL. In fact, everybody has made money, you know, gobs of it. So the difference is, what do you want to do now that you've made that gob full of money? Do you want to put it in your pocket? Do you want to wave it around at all the other owners and say, see what I got? Or do you want to win football games with it? Yeah. And Bisciotti's one of those rare guys who wants to win football games.
Let me ask
in addition
before
to making
we move
money.
On, Would you guys, if you're Shanahan or Lynch or whoever, and there's just the Yannick Ngakoue's call is going out. Anybody else willing to offer a third and a fifth? Would you have done that?
Well, he's due $12 million this year, and you got $4 million of cap space. So the contract is prohibitive, to say the least. However, I understand why the Niners would hesitate to do that. Because remember, every draft pick is capital invested already in that position. They've invested as much draft capital in their defensive line as I think a team is allowed to.
And cash capital.
No kidding. Yeah, with Dee Ford never showing
up. With Eric
up,
Armstead? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of money and draft assets committed to that line.
Solomon Thomas, the huge swing and a miss. You get Bosa. You got Eric Armstead. You got, like you just said, Dee Ford now.
You don't have Buckner, but you still spent a draft pick on him.
Hell yeah. And then you use your other draft pick on another defensive lineman in Javon Kinlaw.
Yep.
I mean, how many picks do you want to have across your defensive line when you got problems in your backfield as well?
And that's it to me. It's the other problems, right? And that's why trading for Jordan Willis surprised me a little bit, although less so when you realize all they gave up was a sixth next year. But if I was going to commit assets to anything, it would start with the offensive line and continue with the defensive backfield. So, you know, part of the consideration has to also be, yeah, Nick Bosa's out this year, but he's still a big part of the future. So I don't know that I need to put assets into another defensive lineman who would be part of the future.
Right, and Nick Bosa, if things proceed accordingly, when he signs his next contract, will become the NFL's highest-paid defensive player in the history of the league. I mean,
yep.
His brother just did that, and he's better than his brother.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you can only spend money any way you want, but if you are in position to make a deep run, as the 49ers probably still are, at least they're not out of position yet, you have to address needs first, because the deeper you go into a season and the deeper you go into January, the more egregious those gaps in your team show up. So if you spent that kind of money on Yannick Ngakoue, it's a reasonable assumption that you probably spent it badly. On the other hand, if you wanted to give up a fifth to get Marcus Peters, maybe I do that.
Yeah.
Because that's what that deal cost them.
The problem with that one is, yeah, I mean, the problem with that, of course, is the reason it cost a fifth is Marcus Peters had run afoul of some folks in a couple of different stops, and there were concerns that, you know, he'd even be playing. That said, when he's on the field, he's awfully good, and that is a very affordable price.
Yeah, no, it's
and it would have most importantly, it would have met a need.
Yeah,
which Yannick Ngakoue doesn't really meet.
Look, if you want a team full of choir boys, good luck with that. I mean, agreed.
It's just that's why he was available for a fifth is all I'm saying. Like, the price was low because the player was questionable.
By the way, you want to talk about good teams make good decisions, bad teams make bad decisions, and then maybe compound them by getting out of them. So the Vikings, who we know gave all that upfront money to Kirk Cousins, that can't look nearly like as good of an idea now as it did then, they gave Jacksonville a second round pick for this guy. And that is going to be a premium second round pick with the way that the Vikings are playing right now. So they basically got six games out of a guy who didn't affect the season for a second round pick that is now no longer theirs. And that's why you're the Vikings. You know, it really is. And did I see that the Vikings are putting Hunter on IR for the rest of the year today too? So they're not going to have two of their best pass rushers now, and
yikes,
it could be not a fire sale, but maybe a lawn sale or a garage sale.
Well, isn't that, I mean, doesn't Ngakoue suggest a fire sale?
Yeah, well, you would think, but it was also just a one-year deal, so you can say, well, you know, we're just looking to get something out of nothing, and we'd rather have the pick that we traded for him back in the third round
yeah.
than let this guy record 8.5 sacks for a team that is going to win 3-4 football games. What's the difference? I guess it's the way they're looking at it. Baltimore Ravens, I told you they made a big move for a big name. They also made a little move for a once big name. Dez Bryant has been signed to the Ravens practice squad. That Dez Bryant, former Dallas Cowboy, Dez Bryant. So I don't know what he's got left. Obviously, every other team in the NFL says nothing, and it's been like that for a couple years. But if the Ravens are interested, all of a sudden, Dez Bryant now is more attractive than he was before the Ravens got interested. That's the kind of respect the Ravens get.
If you think Dez Bryant has anything left, right, it's probably just the ability to go up and get it and fight somebody for a ball. I mean, I find it hard to believe. Yeah, I find it hard to believe that a guy who never was great at creating space and getting open is going to be better at that or even as good now. But he's got big hands and he's a big, strong man. And most of the Ravens receivers are not that. They're little guys with speed. I think they just wanted a big target. You know, a third down red zone target.
It's also educational that they were mentioned briefly in the Antonio Brown sweepstakes and went a very different way. So it may suggest that anytime you see an Antonio Brown rumor being floated, it's probably originating from Drew Rosenhaus, not from a team in the NFL.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
Yeah. Look, it's... You know, the NBA, I know that we're talking about upcoming draft and you got teams putting out smoke screens and they're using distraction and they want rumors circulating to get other people talking. Yeah, that's what agents do about players too. And and sometimes the teams do it. Sometimes the agent does it. And it's one thing that we keep on asking Mike Silver back for because he never carries the water for anyone but his own opinion. That's why we love the guy. And welcome, everyone, to your 4 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Well, okay, Mike Silver will carry water for Cal, but that's about it. That's why we also love him. Mike Silver,
he'd carry a lake for Cal.
I mean, look, I move oceans for Indiana football, for God's sake, so I can relate to it. I really can. Mike Silver on the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're doing really, really well, thank you. You know, everyone, I think, was surprised to see the Niners look as good as they did on the line of scrimmage against the Los Angeles Rams. And now they got to take the show on the road all the way to New England, which hasn't been scoring an awful lot. They're not quite the Patriots that they used to be. But what do you know? Whether you can name the guys or not, Bill Belichick's got a pretty nasty defense waiting for the 49ers, and that's where a chess match between two really good coaches begins. When you start looking at this matchup, what comes to your mind first, Michael?
Well, you're right. It's going to be great coaching on both sides. You know, I think what Robert Saleh did in this past game was pretty tremendous just in terms of stealing that unit. They had a glaring weakness that was obviously exposed in what turned out to be Ryan Fitzpatrick's second to last game as a starter. And, you know, they're missing a ton of players, including a massive difference maker in Nick Bosa. So that was impressive. Offensively, they're always, you know, the game plan's always really good, I think. And, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously, the second game back was a lot different. So, you know, it's encouraging. They don't have as much margin for error as a lot of teams because of that division. But, you know, I think they showed themselves and everyone that they're not just going to crumble this year, that, you know, it may not be close to what last year was in the regular season, but I think they're going to stay.
Then let's flip this on its head. Where are the Patriots right now?
Well, they're missing one. I can't think of what it is, but one key thing. Oh, yeah. One of the greatest quarterbacks of all time is no longer there. And Cam Newton.
Jimmy Garoppolo. Oh, no, maybe someone.
Yeah. Hey, believe me, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo could do a lot worse than Jimmy Garoppolo succeeding Tom Brady. But, you know, they did – they did kind of, swap into a former MVP who was reviving his career. And I went to the Seahawks-Patriots game week two, and that was really cool because they had been a grinded-out defensive-oriented team in the first week, and now they're playing the Seahawks, and then they just opened it up, and Cam looked amazing, and they got to within a yard of winning. And, of course, it being a Seahawks-Patriots game, of course, it came down to 1 yard at the end. But, that was kind of cool, too. And they're coming off a game where, that lack of offensive.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.